Whiteside, Peter Lumsdaine, and Oregon State Representative Jennifer Williamson. Again, that's Drones in Oregon, a community forum on Thursday, August 7th at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. More information at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sex Workers film series. The film to screen on August 2nd will be Mutantes, Punk Porn Feminism. Is pornography an acceptable form of expression? And if so, can distinctions be drawn between different forms of pornography? This documentary raises a number of questions, seeking to provide the answers from the perspective of pro-sex feminism, which asserts that pornography must be wrested from patriarchal control, and that in the hands of women and sexual minorities, it can become a tool of liberation. Again, that's Mutantes. Screening is part of the Sex Workers film series, Saturday, August 2nd, at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio. Stay tuned for It Takes a Village. And welcome to It Takes a Village, and I'm your host, Shahid Hamid. Today, we want to focus on the trouble with Head Start. The Head Start program, by all accounts, has been one of the most successful preschool programs ever created. If this is true, and I personally believe it is, then why is the Albina Head Start office being denied an opportunity to expand the work that they're doing in North Northeast community, especially at a time when early childhood education is so crucial to Black children, to African American culture, and other children of color? With us today to talk about this issue is the director of the Albina Head Start office, Mr. Ron Herndon. And we'd like to welcome him now to our microphones and tell him how glad we are that he's consented to come on the program and talk about this issue. Welcome, Ron. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you very much, Shahid. It's my pleasure to be here.
And I know you know where these studios are, so you this is like a whole home week for you coming back to cable.
It's certainly a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Recently, your office was denied expansion funds to service more children of color. Could you give us some idea of the process and reasoning for such a decision?
Sure. Oregon is one of the few states in the country that appropriates money to expand Head Start services, and it's been doing that since approximately 1988. Since that time, every opportunity for expansion of state funding when it was available. Albina Head Start has applied, and we've always been successful in gaining additional dollars to serve more children and families. This past spring, opportunity was there again for expansion. Approximately $3 million was allocated by the state legislature to expand Head Start funding in the state of Oregon. We applied. We said that we could serve a maximum of 60 children. And we were notified a couple of months later, I think it's in May, perhaps early June, that not only were we not going to get any expansion, but of all of the programs in the state that applied for expansion, that our program was next to last. And we found that to be incredible for several different reasons. One, financially, we've always run a good shop. We are audited every year for well over the last decade. We've had clean audits. No findings. The federal government comes in and does a review of Head Start programs every 3 years. They look at everything, all the way from your fiscal operation, nutrition, social service, education. And for the last approximately 10 years, when they've come in with their team of people, we had no findings. Nothing was found to be out of compliance. So we're thinking, well, the money is well taken care of. We're servicing approximately 1,000 children in the Portland area. We serve the largest number of black children in the state, and certainly in Portland, there are approximately 700 black children being served in Multnomah County. Our program serves 400. And what's special about our program, it's a full day program. It was designed for parents who are working, going to school, or who are in training. So when you think about it, Oregon is just has the dubious distinction of having the least affordable child care in the country, least affordable child care in the country. Childhood poverty has increased tremendously over the last several years. And one of the national studies that came out this past spring unfortunately found that on indicators, I think it's the Annie Casey Foundation, in indicators of the well-being of children, Oregon was one of only 9 states in the country in which Hispanic children, black children, trailed white children in every category. So if you want to measure distress, certainly it's there, unfortunately, in the black community, Latino community. So how is it that the program has an excellent track record, serving an unserved population, has a service model of full-day care, which is similar to child care, in a community where you have extraordinarily high unemployment, people need that to try to go to work, get back on their feet, and you tell them, guess what? You don't get any expansion slots because, one, you weren't innovative enough, and then the reasons begin to get even more comical. You didn't show that you were working with the local office that we've set up to try to coordinate services in the area. And they had to stop and say, what do you mean we're not innovative enough? We have a Mandarin program in our Head Start program, the only one in the state of Oregon and maybe the only one in the country. And our Mandarin program has worked so well, the Portland Public Schools said, hey, we want to extend that into King School and make it a Mandarin immersion program. And guess what, Albina Head Start? Children who come out of your program will have automatic slots into the immersion program at King. And what a lot of people don't understand, once you get in an immersion program, that goes from kindergarten all the way up through high school. So that is just one of the very innovative attempts that our program has been involved in for many, many years. So innovation, you tell us we're not innovative, it's like telling an eagle they can't fly. So the excuses continue to come, and I'm very appreciative. We had a wonderful support letter from Michael Alexander at the Urban League, wonderful support letter from Tony Hobson at SCI saying this can't be. This program is extraordinarily valuable in the community. It has a long track record of service. So briefly, that's the background on the Shaheed. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. What I don't understand, and what I'm having a hard time understanding, if the program is such a success, why do they choose to eat away at it every new administration that comes into office, whether it's nationally, locally? Why do they choose to eat away at what it is clearly a successful program?
Well, and you're right, because the Obama administration, unfortunately, has made a lot of policy decisions regarding Head Start that have been very, very harmful. And a friend of mine described it like this. He said, frequently people come in and they think that they have all the answers, and they fail to speak to the customer. They fail to speak to the person or persons that are closely related to the program and that are involved with children, families in the program. They come in with these fixed ideas that they think are going to improve the program. And the example my friend used, she said, it's just like many years ago when Coca-Cola decided they were going to try to change the flavor of Coke, and they did that, sales tanked. They never talked to the customer to figure out, is that really something the customer wants? So unfortunately, it happens, and you say, why do I have to see this traffic accident over and over? Why don't you talk to the people who are involved with this program, talk to the parents, ask, what is it that we need? What is it we're doing well? What is it we can fix? And how can we go about fixing it? Rather than coming in, the Kitzhaber administration comes in, they know what's best for Head Start. It's unfortunately, they even went to Washington, D.C. and asked Health and Human Services, could Oregon get a waiver from Head Start performance standards? Head Start performance standards are something that Head Start community really, really loves. They are national standards that say, I don't care where you are across the country, whatever model you have, here's certain standards that you have to meet. You can be creative at the local level, but you have to meet these standards. They actually went to Health and Human Services and said, hey, Oregon is asking for a waiver from these standards so we can put together a program we think that best suits Oregon. Head Start community in Oregon was appalled. And they had done that once before when he was in office last time. We were appalled. We said, why would you want to avoid or not adhere to these performance standards which guarantee quality all across the country? So unfortunately, there's a track record of not really understanding Head Start, not really appreciating the kind of success that's in Head Start, even though the research is there, as you stated, Shahid, and probably for me, in terms of whether or not Head Start works. Several years ago, approximately 4 years ago, there's a gentleman, last name is Heckman. He won the Nobel Prize for Economics out of the University of Chicago, I think in 2001. He wrote a letter to Congress when they were talking about budget cutting. He said, look, I've looked at the evidence. Head Start is one of the best investments this country can make. For every dollar you put in Head Start, there's a return of at least $6 to $7. So why would you think about cutting Head Start? So here you have a Nobel laureate who's looked at the information and said, Head Start is a great program, tremendous investment. And now you talk about, I'm going to ask the folks in Health and Human Services to allow Oregon a waiver. I mean, it's almost as if, okay, hey, we've got a computer over here, works fairly well. Can I get in the back of it and take some parts out because I think it's going to work better? I just think it's going to work better if you let me get in the back and take some parts out. So the arrogance that leads to that kind of thinking, it goes beyond common sense. The only thing I can describe it as just being arrogant and not very thoughtful when you shape policies like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the specific things that I like about the Albina office, especially, is the fact that the students get a chance to work with teachers that look like them.
Right.
You know, and very often, and I work in mental health, and one of the complaints that we hear regularly is that when people with addiction problems or other kinds of issues, when they go for treatment, there's no one that looks like them in terms of culturally speaking and just physically. And one of the things that I know you've been really active with trying to get teachers qualified to teach in public schools. There have been recent reports that I think 3% of the teachers in Oregon are African American. 3%. The Albina Head Start office clearly has a diversity that is attractive and meaningful to the community.
Well, Shahid, that's something that's very important to us. Yeah. Is that And the folks who work with children in our program, that they look like the children that come to us every day and the families that come to us every day. As I mentioned earlier, we serve approximately, 1,000 children. In rough numbers, 60% of them are black, 30-40% are Hispanic. So our workforce looks much like the families that we serve. And that's not an accident, because we think that's important for a number of reasons. And what we've seen over the years, if you are serious about having a diverse workforce, and you'll take steps to make sure that that happens. And that's what's so troubling about the funding decisions at the state. For an administration that says it's concerned about equity, and equity is the lens that they want to use when they make decisions, and they want to make sure that the children who haven't been served are being served. Now, how in the world can you make expansion decisions regarding $3 million, an additional almost 400 children, and no one in the room said, how is this going to impact the black community? Because the programs that receive money, for the most part, they serve very, very few black children, very few. As I mentioned earlier, we serve the largest number in the state, and certainly the largest number in Multnomah County. So all these smart people in Salem who are supposedly genuflecting in front of equity, did not someone say, for those children who are underserved, black children in particular, how are they going to be impacted by this $3 million? Are we going to increase services for them? Apparently not. So it just makes a mockery of all this talk about the equity lens, and mm-hmm. we want to make sure that the underserved are served. So I think I would really encourage some of the legislators to get involved with this, because I don't think this is what they had in mind when they were talking about expanding services for Head Start children in Oregon.
Well, that probably would be wise if they did get involved with this particular situation, because I know you wrote a letter asking for an appeal, and one of the things that surprised me about this process is this lady, Jada Ripley, said that there's no appeal process.
Right, that caught us off guard too. I mean, when these are taxpayers' dollars. They're not funding this out of their hip pocket. That $3 million is tax. Those are taxpayer dollars. And to tell anyone, we have allocated Oregon taxpayer dollars, and if you disagree with our allocation, there is no appeal. I think the state attorney general may have something to say about that, and we are asking that they take a look at that decision. That's news to me. I always thought taxpayer dollars, if people thought they're not being spent well, there is an avenue for appeal.
Mm-hmm. The same young lady, Jada Ripley, she's representative of the governor's office.
Yeah, she runs early childhood division for Governor Kitzhaber.
And she played a role in denying the expansion funds for Albina Head Start. And she's reported to have said she knows you do good work. She doesn't want to argue that point, but it doesn't show on paper. Is her response? What's your response to?
Well, I disagree. Shahid, I had to go back and reread our proposal. And in the first paragraph, it talks about high degree of childhood poverty. A lot of people may or may not know that the poorest citizens in this country are children between the ages of 0 birth to 5. That's disgraceful. And certainly for black, Latino, or other children of color, it's even worse. So you're talking about huge increase in poverty for children of color. You're talking about Oregon as the least affordable child care in the country. And we put that in the first paragraph and said, we think because we're serving the underserved and we have a full day model that allows parents to go to school, to get training, or go to work, that we are perfectly suited to expand by at least 60 slots. Now, I don't know how you can make the case any better than that, and we went on to substantiate that and talk about how we would be able to serve those children. So, okay, put aside the fact that we have great financial controls in place. Put aside that we've had great federal reviews for the last 10 decade plus. Put that aside. Then tell me how you are going to make a decision about $3 million serving low-income children and not someone in the room say, how is this going to impact black children? Okay, so you're not going to give the increased funding to Alabama and Head Start, then who are you going to give it to serve these children? Because the other programs, their percentage of black children served in Multnomah County is minuscule. So even if you say we can't do it, which I certainly disagree with, then who did you say was going to offer services to these children?
What's
going
to happen to these
right.
children, yeah.
That obviously that was not even a point of discussion. And that's okay, but please quit using this word about equity. That's the thing that disturbs me. You know, I've seen unfair decisions made about programs, and certainly programs I've been associated with all my life. This is not new. But please don't add insult to injury and say, oh, we have this equity lens that we use to make decisions, and that's the most important lens that we have when we make decisions about the state of Oregon. That's the part that just galls me. Just drop the equity and say, this is business as usual.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about your financial, keeping your financial house in order, didn't you complete payments on several sites that you... several sites that you use?
Yes, and again, this is what's ironic. There is something called new market tax credits. Without going through the details of it, it allowed us to pay off debt on several buildings that we own. And part of that funding, there's some federal funding that comes through out of the Treasury Department, and they get banks involved and involved nationally, U.S. Bank, Wells Fargo, nationally, not locally, nationally, with these tax credits to make it possible for us to retire this debt. Well, it came to a total of $10 million, and they looked at our program up and down. When you start talking about that kind of money, the banks and the government are going to get involved in investing in a program, you come under a lot of scrutiny, as well you should. They came out saying, hey, this is a marvelous program, you're doing great work. And they made that financing available. And what's really ironic, part of the new market tax credits not only came from the federal government, but from the state of Oregon. Now, that was the part that was just ironic to me. One hand of the state of Oregon is saying, oh, your proposal is not good enough to be funded. The other hand in the state of Oregon said, oh, great, we want to get involved with this funding to help you retire the debt. I'm glad it wasn't coming out of the Department of Education in the state of Oregon, because I think we probably would have been just as broke as the Ten Commandments. So that is another part of why this looks not only insane, but it appears as if there is no accountability for what people say. If you say that equity is something that is important to you, if you say you want to make sure that the unserved is served, if you say you want to try to ameliorate suffering and past injustices, and then you turn around programmatically and you don't even touch a population that meets all of those deficits, you don't even in any way have an impact upon black children in the state of Oregon, certainly in Portland, where most black children reside. So that's the part, again, Shahid, that is disturbing to me. I'd prefer people leave the equity talk alone. Mm-hmm. Do business the way you want to, and we will do what we possibly can to shine a light on that. But leave equity out of the discussion.
You're listening to It Takes a Village, and our topic today is the trouble with Head Start. And my guest is Mr. Ronnie Herndon, director of the Albina Head Start office. And we're certainly glad to have him here. With us, did you contact the governor's office? Because I know Kitsap is supposed to be doing some reforming or reevaluating preschool programs, educational kindergarten programs.
Yes, we have. We've been in contact with them, and there are discussions now about the possibility of Albina getting 20 children that were left over after expansion. So that discussion is occurring, and there's certain stipulations they're trying to put on that we're saying that's not going to work. So I don't know how that's going to turn out, but there's a part of me, Shahid, that feels like this. You've just allocated $3 million, 372 children through this expansion, and because there have been some objections raised by Albina Head Start, you say, well, there are 20 kids. We think we might be able to shuffle those off to you. So that to me, it borders insult. On insult. It really absolutely. Borders on insult. Absolutely. We weren't good enough to make the grade, but here's 20 that we're going to slide to you over here. So can we turn down for me as being an administrator in Alabama Head Start, you have to think, well, that's 20 children, 20 families. That might help them go to work. That might help them to get back in school. Right, sure. I mean, you can't display the same kind of arrogance and say that because they have really screwed up, because they did not live up to their own self-imposed mandates about equity, that now you're going to say, well, 20 is not enough. But I'm not a fool. I do know it in terms of 372 children, the 20 is inconsequential, and given the need of the black community, when you start looking at unemployment, when you start looking at dropout rate, when you start looking at problems with health and people saying that Head Start. Oh, hey, one of the things that they said, even in the Bush administration, they found out that Head Start was credited with lowering the childhood mortality rate for the entire country. That's for children between ages of 5 and 8. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That most of those children are not in Head Start, but because of the emphasis that Head Start puts on health, that you have families talking to neighbors, talking to relatives about the importance of health care, up to date on immunization, that Head Start was responsible for lowering the childhood mortality rate in the entire country. Wow. So if you are concerned about health and obesity in all communities, and certainly in underserved communities, wouldn't that be something that you would use to address that and attack it, since it is obviously Head Start has been so successful in working with healthcare with children and with parents? So that's the other part of this, that when you begin to look at, here's an opportunity to have an impact upon an underserved community's healthcare, education, dropout rate, helping the adults go back to work, get more training. And obviously, this was not a part of the discussion when you began to allocate $3+ million taxpayer dollars. Mm-hmm.
Well, Ron, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to
Anytime.
Discuss this matter with us. And we wish we certainly had more time. We wish you the very best.
Thank you, Shahid. Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. But one final question, quick question I'd like to ask you. When you reflect on your time and work at Reed College, your student advocacy work and your advocacy as co-chair of the Black United Front, now with Head Start, how much has really changed, Ron?
If you any measurement or metric that you want to use to look at the condition, I'll just talk about black people in this country. Very little for most black people. Yes, there are a few black people who've been able to do very well, some extraordinarily well. But for most black people, very, very little has changed. And I think last time we were together, I mentioned something a friend of mine said. He said, it's just like a train. At the end of the train is a caboose. If the train is going 50 miles an hour or 150 miles an hour, the caboose is still at the end of the train. And that's basically the condition of black people in this country.
I can't disagree with that. Well, thank you again so much, and we look forward to us talking again sometime soon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Shahid.
I'm Shahid Hamid for It Takes a Village. Until next time, peace. We out.
And that was It Takes a Village with Shahid Hamid. Coming up next on KBOO Portland, Between the Lines, featuring how U.S. and NATO actions in Ukraine could trigger a new Cold War, and the state of Maine decides to block the export of tar sands oil. This is your community radio, KBOO Portland, Hood River and the Gorge, Philomath, and Corvallis. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Tom Hayden, former California State Senator and veteran peace and civil rights organizer, who discusses the danger of a new Cold War with Russia and policy options to end the bloody conflict in eastern Ukraine. Four-time independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader, who observes that the ongoing Gaza conflict is an inevitable result of Israel's suffocating economic blockade and more than 45 years of illegal occupation. And Dylan